Welcome to the Dialogue by Wirepoints, connecting the dots between our economy, government, and people. And now your hosts, Ted Dabrowski and Mark Glennon.
Welcome to the Dialogue. Mark Glennon from Wirepoints here with my colleague Ted Dabrowski. Lots going on this week, so we'll just try to cover some of the highlights of the week and emphasize how important they are. Crime. I am concerned that we are at DEFCON 1 in Chicago. We may be approaching it. We're taping this on Thursday, last night, Wednesday night. Crowd of 300 basically took over the North Avenue Beach, then moved inland. It was relatively peaceful, except stomping on cars, took over a few gas stations and such. But this could easily have gotten out of hand. The police were outnumbered. And this is in a very nice neighborhood. I used to live there myself. If you don't know where it is, it's right at the bottom, the south end of Lincoln Park Zoo. High rises and nice single family homes in there. And this was pitched ahead of time. It was billed online as the North Avenue Beach takeover. Extremely dangerous, obviously, and that's what they did. They took it over. Ted, am I overreacting, or we've got more hot weather coming? It's sultry, humid. This is the kind of weather in which bad things happen in Chicago, and we're in for another 4 or 5 days of it. What do you think, Ted?
Well, yeah, this is the problem, is that we've become so lenient over the last 2 years. Certainly, the George Floyd incident was never really controlled in Chicago. Then we've had COVID, and we've had people doing all kinds of bad things, and we've never stopped it. And so now, big groups of kids can think they can, come take over large areas, and maybe they come without any, malintent. But the problem is when you get big groups like that, it can lead to bad things. And then, layer on top of that what's been happening in the nice neighborhoods, South Loop, in the Loop, Lincoln Park, Lakeview, the crimes are starting to pop up in places where we don't want to see them. And certainly we've talked a lot at Wirepoints about the carjackings and all the other crimes that are going on, even in the Gold Coast. So this is becoming a bigger and bigger story, and it becomes harder and harder because as the mobs grow, as the numbers grow, as the perpetrators grow, if you don't stop it, that means that if you ever want to stop it, you're going to have to take some pretty serious actions to stop it. And then the question is going to be, what's going to be the reaction to that? And this is where it gets tricky.
And where's leadership on this? We've heard nothing about this incident last night, nothing in terms of what's going to head off a worse occurrence. Mayor Lightfoot is down in Texas, unbelievably, for 5 days, raising money and trying to recruit Chicago companies to come here based on the notion of our social justice and equity and all that stuff. Good luck with that in Texas. And of course, this week, she also made a call to arms, as she called it, on national TV in response to the leaked opinion on abortion, would apparently indicate that the Supreme Court is about to overturn Roe v. Wade. Some people said she didn't have any male intent on this, but Ted, as you and I have discussed, she was asked on MSNBC, explain what you mean by a call to arms. That was an open invitation for her to disrespect any kind of violent response, and she didn't take it. She kind of changed the subject and talked about something else. And you combine that with the atmosphere that was fomented during the 2020 riots, when nothing was done to stop the attacks on the statues. And later there were some mild statements from her regarding the riots, but late and overdue. I'd be thinking seriously about calling up the National Guard right now to head something off. This can get really bad very fast.
No, you're right, Mark. She has no plan. They have no plan in Chicago, and they're stuck because they've really they've gone overboard on equity, the whole equity lens, and they're so committed to that now to actually do things that protect the ordinary people of Chicago will make them look like they're going back on their word to those who are for the DEI and the equity language. So it's a really tough one. And you know, and Lightfoot, you know, back to the call to arms, Lightfoot is the one that should be most sensitive to that kind of language. You know, sure, everybody in the movement say, hey, we got to fight, we got to go, right? And use some pretty hyperbolic language. But, you know, if there's anybody that needs to be careful about using that kind of language, it is Lightfoot, given the situation she has in her city.
And President Biden was here over the week. Interesting, by the way, Lightfoot was not there. And as you recall from a past visit by Biden, she complained that she was kind of pushed off to the sidelines when Biden was here. You have to wonder if Pritzker and Biden aren't kind of distancing themselves from her. That would be smart if they would. But tell us what Biden talked about when he was here, what he should have talked about, more importantly, Ted.
Well, you know, one thing he did talk about, and he's right to talk about inflation. That's, you know, according to a lot of polls right now across America, that's the biggest issue. People are just getting whacked by inflation. But, you know, instead of taking ownership for some of the messes that he's made and by printing the trillions of dollars that he's printed, instead he's trying to blame Putin. What do you call it? The Putin price hike or something like that. And he's blaming it all on that, when in fact we know that the problems were there long before Russia invaded Ukraine. So, you know, he's blaming that. He's trying to blame Trump and MAGA for everything that's going on right now in this country. And the problem is that there's a host of policies that he's led on and that have been, let's say, championed also by Governor Pritzker, and that they've gone hand in hand in so many things. And I think that's why they're good partners. You know, their energy policy that's been, as we see, has been destructive. They've been hand in hand on that. They were both for the bailouts. Governor Pritzker was one of the biggest cheerleaders for the trillions in bailouts that eventually, you know, part of that came to Illinois. They have been, you know, higher taxes on gas. Of course, that's a Pritzker thing. But look where gas prices are. So it's all a mess. And of course, they were partners in the COVID lockdowns. So all these problems that we're having right now are emanated by them and their policies.
And Ted, you know, just today, Biden announced that he's canceling a huge oil and gas lease in Alaska. I mean, it's truly as if they're trying to do everything they can to harm America and laughing in our faces as they do it.
Well, Mark, I guess in the end, it'll all play out in the elections, whether Americans understand, you know, what he's done and what that's meant and what that's meant to gas prices and inflation, or, you know, they let him do it. And we'll just see what happens.
And, you know, Pritzker is never asked to comment on any of these things. Of course, he gets full rein to talk about the abortion decision, because that's thought to benefit Democrats, which may or may not be true, but that's the common perception. Press never asks him where he stands on these other things. He's in full support of Pritzker on this other stuff. The other thing he could be doing about inflation, by the way, is tens of billions of that federal largesse is still in the pipeline. And, you know, it could be canceled or redirected to something appropriate, because it's being used for everything, as we've published many stories to that effect here and across the country. But that would be one thing, because clearly a major contributor to inflation has been this spigot of federal money, and it's still flowing. Cut it off, or at least spend it wisely in some way that helps people. That's not being done. Pritzker's party to it. Nobody ever bothers to challenge him on it. Ted, let's move on to what Chicago is trying to do about their image, believe it or not, in response to Boeing's announcement that they are leaving Chicago, leaving their headquarters here. It was an op-ed from Chicago's chief marketing officer. He also is the CEO of the independent group that markets for Chicago. Tough job, you know, cut him some slack on that. But this op-ed he had in Crain's, I mean, you know, it's borderline unbelievable. He claims that we're experiencing record growth, record economic growth in Chicago, and building a new and better, more equitable Chicago along the way. You know, what's he talking about? Does anybody believe him? I mean, we're really in a situation where it seems like they say things, nobody believes them. They know that nobody believes them, but the charade goes on, and nobody calls them out, and they continue. I mean, who's this registering with? And I've got an article up on this, Ted, but the rest of the marketing efforts. Earlier this month, they announced Chicago water, canned water, as a way to pitch to Chicago. you know, this goes on and on. They've got it's been going on for a year with crazy mottos for Chicago that have been ridiculed by the press. Ted, as we've said, the only truly effective marketing strategy for Chicago would be to list honestly the problems that we face and what's being done about them. A convincing list of reforms and remedies. That's why no marketing effort, a serious marketing effort, can be done here, because they won't talk about things like school choice or serious crackdowns on crime or reforming collective bargaining agreements, getting rid of the Chicago Teachers Union, firing people that aren't producing who are working in city jobs. There's no marketing program to be had as long as they won't talk about the problems that are affecting Chicago.
No, you're right, Mark. And, my favorite one that they've had so far, Chicago, not in Chicago, that one ad where you get to see New York in Chicago, you get to see it in Brazil or, you know, wherever, Rio. And they're trying to show off the things that have been exported to other cities, and you can see them there. But that's kind of a silly thing. We want people to come to Chicago to see Chicago. So that's really a backwards plan. And you know, when it comes back to, you know, they just can't tell the truth, Mark, because the problem is that the people who are running the city are the unions. It is the Chicago Teachers Union. And I know that people say Lightfoot's not connected to the union, but, you know, that's, to me, that's naive. They're all connected because they're all collectively running that city. They control billions of dollars, billions of policies. They're getting to do their equity agenda, their belief that equity lens is it. That's how you transform Chicago. And so they can't let go of that. And if they were to do things like school choice and you know, truly, you know, crack down on crime and things like that, that would be, you know, the end for the power that the unions and those, you know, political elite have. That's just the bottom line.
Yet they're so wise, Ted, our ruling class, that they see fit to pick winners and losers in our economy. So you have a wonderful story up about Rivian, the much heralded success story, we were told, thanks to, again, government largesse, going back to a Mitsubishi plant that was built in Normal, Illinois. It was taken over, and with further incentives, Rivian, the electric car and truck manufacturer, took it over, and Pritzker announced that electric vehicles were going to be part of the salvation of Illinois. Surprise, surprise, it hasn't worked out. Tell us what you wrote about, Ted.
Well, yeah, you know, Rivian went public earlier. Geez, I'm starting to forget if that was this year. I'm forgetting my years now. But they were a big part of Governor Pritzker and the rest of course, his team on trying to move Illinois into one of the world leaders in energy, in clean energy. And so, you know, they've embraced Rivian. They created a bunch of money to hand out to the EV industry. And of course, you know, Rivian was touted as one of those. Rivian stock just skyrocketed, hit $172. And since then, it has collapsed 90%. It's down to $20. And, you know, we're not trying to say whether Rivian is going to be successful or not. We're not here to figure that out. But what we want to say is neither should Governor Pritzker and you know, Illinois' political elite. They can't choose winners and losers. They have no idea who's going to win and who's going to lose. But what they're doing is they're gambling with taxpayer dollars, raising taxes, handing out the money to companies and see if they get it right. And of course, if they get it right, they'll act like they're heroes and you know, save the day, or they'll ignore it if it's a money loser. And within that same story, Mark, you know, they've also been, as we all know, picking winners and losers in what types of energy we use. And so Illinois has gone bigger than virtually any state in the country in terms of solar and wind. And they've done their best to kick down anything that's you know, coal or carbon burning, and now there are warnings of potential brownouts this summer in downstate Illinois. So we don't need this government. We don't need any government really choosing these winners and losers. But you know, we could have a real mess this summer if we have brownouts. People will not be happy.
If it's not this summer, it's going to be eventual, because there's absolutely no way, as we've written often, that renewables are going to perform as well as is baked into the assumptions that are behind that new clean energy bill that was passed. Hopefully somebody's going to wake up and reverse that policy, but so far we are on the wrong track. Ted, switching subjects.
Mark,
go ahead.
Mark, just real quick, let me make a point there, is that we tried to find out whether Governor Pritzker actually has a firm plan about how to transition from where we are today to his eventual 100% clean energy. And we FOIA'd, we reached out, we never got a plan. So back to your point, I don't know how this is, you know, how we're going to avoid problems, because there is no plan. And we've already seen problems in California. Hopefully we can avoid those, but I'm not betting on that.
Ted, changing subjects, because there's a particularly interesting, good article by somebody who's really influential in academia. He's at the University of Chicago. His name is Charles Lipson. He goes way back. I remember reading his stuff in college. He's widely recognized as a first-rate scholar. And you usually don't see academics like that criticizing fellow academics, but he's got a wonderful story we posted from Real Clear Politics. First of all, calling out the history of loyalty oaths, which came out of Chicago. And there's a fellow named George Anastapio, who I didn't know brought the original lawsuit against those. He lost that suit in a very famous case. It's widely assumed now that he would win that suit if it were brought today, thanks to a beautiful dissent by Justice Black. But Mr. Anastapio lived the rest of his life as a non-lawyer after graduating as an honors graduate from law school and becoming a law professor at Loyola, because he refused to take a loyalty oath. And he himself became a major scholar, and according to Lipson, was kind of the Socrates of Hyde Park near the University of Chicago, a great thinker. But anyway, Lipson calls him out as a true hero, which he is, and contrasts him with the people at the University of Illinois who have put in their very intense diversity, equity, inclusion requirements for faculty there. We've written about this several times. It essentially requires faculty there to become DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion activists, wokesters, basically, if they want to get promoted or hired or tenured. And Lipson, anyway, just does a fantastic job contrasting that kind of attitude today, this attitude of intolerance, to the kind of person and principles that Anastapio championed. I'll give you a quote here from Lipson's article. "We need a lot more people like George Anastapio's integrity in public and private universities, in K-12 schools, and in private businesses and nonprofits. His courage and his reverence for America's Constitution are an enduring model." Amen to that. Read the article that's in Real Clear and posted on our site. Ted, next topic. I mean, there's so many national stories that are becoming pertinent to Illinois. It goes beyond inflation. But the stock market, of course, is almost officially in bear territory right now. S&P is down 19%. 20% is officially a bear market. That's going to beat the daylights out of pensions. Tell us, you know, first, Ted, what you think, what effect you think this might have on pensions.
We have all kinds of moving parts, you know, so it's a little bit complex, because inflation in theory is good for, quote, reducing the debts of Illinois on pensions. So maybe there's a little bit of positive there, although I argue it'll slowly be or quickly be eaten up by, you know, more expensive contracts as teachers and government workers ask for more money. But the real issue, you know, we had a once in a lifetime, the one out of 30 years stock market returns last year. And so, you know, people like Governor Pritzker and others were celebrating how well the pensions have done, and, you know, things are better, and, you know, we got the credit rating upgrades partially because of that. But, you know, here we are again. You know, I'm looking at the NASDAQ year to date. The NASDAQ year to date's down, 30%. That, of course, is not how we measure here in Illinois. I'm not a calendar year, but it's down 30%. So there is going to be some huge losses. Of course, we have to see how this all plays out. But, you know, you got to think about what's happening with private equity. Real estate might be okay, but bonds are getting destroyed. So this could be a pretty ugly period for Illinois and other states that are in trouble. We have to wait and see. But, you know, I think this whole celebration on the credit upgrades in Illinois is really dangerous, because there's nothing really positive, you know, infrastructurally under that. It's all bad news.
Ted, let me throw in my 2 cents worth about bonds, because this topic is being ignored. And of course, that's the other big asset category that pensions hold. Besides stocks, they hold a lot of bonds. But look at the proportionate change in return on bonds and the interest rates on bonds. They have doubled. The 10-year treasury bond has gone from about 1.5% per year to 3%. And of course, as interest rates go up, the value of the bonds go down. So that has slaughtered the bond market. Most bond funds are down by 20%, depending on the maturity. Some are higher than that. But that makes this a particularly unusual situation. You have so much wealth being erased in both the stock and the bond market. And that's going to fall particularly hard on pensions. We won't see it for the state pensions until reports come out for the year end, which is June 30. A few months after that, we'll see some returns. But boy, if the market continues in the way that it's going, you can expect a massive increase in unfunded liabilities, because the assets that they hold that are supposed to cover their liabilities are getting obliterated.
Yeah, that's true. And I wonder how, it's going to, like you said, it's going to take time. I wonder how the rating agencies who've upgraded Illinois, they've upgraded New York, they've upgraded Connecticut, they've upgraded New Jersey. A lot of the problem states, I don't include New York there, but they've all gotten upgrades, the first upgrades in 20 years for those three states. And yet again, though, maybe that was premature, or maybe they just, raise them and keep them there for a while. But maybe it's a little fast action by the rating agencies.
Ted, another national story that's worth calling people's attention to is from Route 50, which is a publication you might not be familiar with, but they do an excellent job covering state and federal relations. And we post their stories when they see them. And they've got one detailed one focusing on the states that have, pissed away this federal money that was handed out to them during the pandemic. They focus on three states: Illinois, of course, California, and Pennsylvania. But it's basically an affirmation of what we've been saying from the start, that Illinois did not use this windfall that it got from the federal government. It had little to do with COVID relief. It patched up the problems that the state is having. And as soon as that money runs out, which is going to be in a year and a half or so, we're going to be back to exactly where we were, because the same problems are still there. There was no structural change in the way Illinois spends its money. And Ted, as you've written, the state likes to gloat about their new and improved credit ratings. But the fact is that we're still at the bottom, or near the bottom, respecting other states. And it just reflects the fact that the rating agencies focus on whether the bonds are going to go in default in the next few years. They aren't, because of all this cash laying around from the federal government. So in our view, as you've written often, Ted, the ratings just don't mean a whole lot.
Yeah, ditto, Mark, ditto.
We don't talk about politics too much. We talk about policy, but when we get something meaningful about politics, we posted the latest polling from a credible pollster that shows Irvin leading over Bailey in the Republican primary by 24-20. Irvin, of course, is kind of the establishment-backed candidate, I think it's fair to say, has a lot of money behind him, is generally assumed to be the winner. Bailey, even though he's being painted by some as a closet Democrat, is in fact a hardcore conservative and total Trump supporter, trailing the pack, 8% for Rabin, and Sullivan has 7%. Solomon and Schimpf each have 2%. Lots of mudslinging going on. Ted, we don't get into the primaries very much. We leave that to the political columnists to speculate on what's going on. But you got any reaction to those poll numbers? Any surprise there?
Well, I think, Bailey, before Irvin got in, Bailey was the clear leader because he'd been in the Senate, or he's in the Senate, Illinois Senate. He got a lot of attention when he opposed the masks and sued the governor for the mask mandates. And, he's fought the executive orders. So he had a pretty good base. He's got a good, really good grassroots base, probably downstate, much more so than, in the suburbs here. Irvin is the one who's had over, was it 20 or 25 million from Ken Griffin. So he's been able to spend, and, anybody who watches any amount of TV will see his ads running, hitting hard on Bailey and hitting hard on Sullivan, trying to paint them as Democrats, or non-Trumpers, let's put it that way. And so I guess many people, I think the collective wisdom is wondering, how Irvin with that much money hasn't gotten a bigger lead. So I guess that remains to be seen whether it's these two guys who played out for the primary. Rabine is a guy who's pretty thoughtful, business guy, probably not happy with this poll, seeing 8%, and Sullivan probably the same, seeing 7%. But I think there's going to be a lot of more mudslinging in the next few weeks. We've only got till June 28th for the primary. So I guess for now, what this looks like is it looks like it's a setup between Irvin and Bailey. And we'll see. Irvin is of course attacking very hard, and Bailey's playing defense. But we'll have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and primaries in June, of course. Then we'll get into the general election. Democrats in Illinois have pretty much made it clear that especially Pritzker and Lightfoot, that they will go scorched earth on abortion. And we're not going to tell you what to think about abortion or about the Supreme Court issues thereon. But we will talk about the political aspects of it. A lot of people read the polls and say, hey, this is a winning issue for Democrats because almost two-thirds of the public is basically pro-choice. But boy, when you dig into those numbers about how pro-choice they are, whether it should be left to the states, it gets highly debatable. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out in Illinois and elsewhere in the country. Pritzker and Lightfoot were very quick out of the gate to condemn this draft opinion that appears to indicate that Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned. But we'll see. Illinois, the truth is, it's not going to affect Illinois law at all, because if it's Roe v. Wade is overturned, state law will be left in place and Illinois law won't be touched. But the Illinois Democrats at least seem to want to go further than that, make Illinois an abortion safety zone for people from other states. Of course, they eliminated parental notification law. Ted, do you think this is a winner for Dems, or do you think it's to be determined, as I do?
It's interesting because, on the one hand, I'd say, yeah, it's good for Dems in terms of, like just pure electioneering prospects. But at the same time, you were talking about what Lightfoot was doing and in Texas, pushing equity, pushing, this is a place if you need to come have an abortion, Illinois is it. And you got to wonder whether it's been overplayed. Now, is it being so overplayed that it opens up the door for messages from the Republicans? They're all pro-life, and Bailey's a strong pro-life. So I guess it depends on, how well whoever the ultimate winner is in the primary, how well they can package this whole, abortion tourism, as they're calling it, on top of all the other failed policies that Illinois Democrats have passed over the last, few decades. So I don't know. It could tip the thing in the wrong way for Democrats rather than it being a positive for them.
Yeah. A pro-choice person I know said, it bothers me that the Democrats seem as happy about the political consequences, more happy about the political consequences of this than they are sad about Roe v. Wade being overturned. And if that image really gets projected, that will backfire on them, even among pro-choice people.
And Mark, it's important to point out that we're on the extreme end of the abortion discussion in Illinois, right? I mean, we push it as far as any other state will push it. And that too, you know, this whole celebration for many people who are, you know, opposed to abortion, or even those who are for it. You remind me of how Clinton said it. He wanted to be legal but rare, or something like that.
Safe, and, legal, and rare. Safe, legal, and rare.
Safe, legal, and rare. Well, that's not what we're saying in Illinois. The people who are for abortion, they, you know, they're like, you know, they celebrate it as like, you know, quantities. And I hope I'm not saying it wrong, but it's too much. And again, that's, again, could be another backfiring for Democrats.
Well, there's a lot going on in Illinois, obviously, so that's why we've chosen to try to recap all that's going on this week, at least the major issues. There's still more on our homepage. We collect, again, all the major stories that we see in opinion pieces. Two-thirds of our homepage is devoted to that, and we put our own analysis and commentary in the right column. So we hope you'll visit wirepoints.org and tune in next week to the Dialogue by Wirepoints. Talk to you then.